Are you tired of trying to motivate yourself? You're not alone. We all know how it goes. It's January 1st. You get inspired, you start working on something new or some inspiring goals, and then nothing happens. Or worse, you give up after a few days or weeks of starting on something really great. Sound familiar? Me too. If so, this episode is for you. In today's episode, we talk about why motivation can be overrated and what to do instead. It's going to change the way you think about your goals forever. Welcome to the Readout Podcast. I'm your host, Jake Walchins. And for the past 10 years, I've been helping young leaders reach their potential. At Readout, our belief is that to lead out, you have to read out. And to read out means to read well and to read broadly. Almost every great leader in history has been a reader. And we wholeheartedly agree with Margaret Fuller when she said, today a reader, tomorrow a leader. Reading is not optional to leadership. It's not the side dish. It's the main course. And in order to become a great leader, you have to dig in. But here's the problem. We here at Readout know that in this day and age, time and energy is hard to come by. My hope is to save you that time and energy and bring you the best books that can have impact in your life right now. Then I want to teach you to get the most out of these books so that you can become the leader you've always dreamed of being faster than you've ever imagined. Our dream is to create a movement of young adults passionate about reading and dangerously effective at leading. Thank you to everyone sharing and reviewing us. I truly appreciate that you would take the time to do that. We absolutely need your help building this movement, and it means a lot that you would go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you're receiving your podcast and review and share this on social media. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Today, we're starting a new series called Your Next Chapter. It's one I've been excited about for a long time. And in this series, we're going to take one of our recommended books and then read and analyze one of its best chapters. From start to finish, we will have you pumping literary iron on the best content from the best books. Think of it as a crash course for instant application. At Readout, we don't just read books, we apply them and we master them. So here's to today's chapter. Today's chapter comes from Atomic Habits by James Clear. If you want to check out our episode about the book, go back to the book that kills mediocrity and please check it out there. This book is amazing and lives up to the title, helping you create small habits that result in atomic or very large changes in your life. This book has revolutionized my life in terms of shaping long-term habits, and I'm so grateful I picked it up. The chapter we're looking at today is called Motivation is Overrated. Environment often matters more. This is one of the finer points in the book that had the biggest impact on me, and I think you'll see why. What we're going to do today is read the chapter together, and I'll stop 2 to 3 times to further elaborate on a couple key sections that I really want to stick with you. Without further ado, let's jump in. Anne Thorndike, a primary care physician at Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston, had a crazy idea. She believed she could improve the eating habits of thousands of hospital staff and visitors without changing their willpower or motivation in the slightest way. In fact, she didn't plan on talking to them at all. Thorndike and her colleagues designed a 6-month study to alter the choice architecture of the hospital cafeteria. They started by changing how drinks were arranged in the room. Originally, the refrigerators located next to the cash registers in the cafeteria were filled only with soda. The researchers added water as an option to each one. Additionally, they placed baskets of bottled water next to the food stations throughout the room. Soda was still in the primary refrigerators, but water was now available at all drink locations. Over the next 3 months, the number of soda sales at the hospital dropped by 11.4%. Meanwhile, sales of bottled water increased by 25.8%. They made similar adjustments and saw similar results with the food in the cafeteria. Nobody had said a word to anyone eating there. People often chose products not because of what they are, but because of where they are. If I walk into the kitchen and see a plate of cookies on the counter, I'll pick up half a dozen and start eating, even if I hadn't been thinking about them beforehand and didn't necessarily feel hungry. If the communal table at the office is always filled with donuts and bagels, it's going to be hard not to grab one every now and then. Your habits change depending on the room you are in and the cues in front of you. Let's stop there for a second. Here, James Clear says, your habits change depending on the room you're in and the cues in front of you. What an amazing line. One of the ways I've applied this concept is with my TV. I always wanted to be a great reader, but could not find enough time to get through all the books I wanted to. My nighttime routine went like this. Finish everything up, put the kids down, talk to Rose for a second. Then we turn on the TV and scroll. Look at my last episode to see our procedure there. We would watch something, then go to bed. I had a habit of watching TV at night and really wanted to change that habit. I tried willpower and motivation, but it didn't work. After reading this chapter, I tried a new approach. I needed to change the room and my cues. So here was step number one, move the remote. I thought if I moved the TV remote, I'd have less of a cue to turn on the TV. Turns out, didn't work. I found myself looking for the TV remote and getting frustrated and still watching. I was like, okay, I still got work to do. So try number two on changing my environment with the TV was this. Unplug the TV. This worked pretty well for a second. The only problem was I could still see the TV. I'd do well for 15 minutes, then like a junkie, I'd start fiending for a fix, right? 30 minutes passed and I almost always ended up plugging it back in and kicking myself for just double wasting my time. It wasn't working. So I had to try again. Try number three on changing my environment was move the TV completely. I took the TV, unplugged it, and put it facing backwards in my bedroom. I was blown away by the change. Since then, my TV intake has gone down dramatically. I would say it's down to maybe a fifth of what it was before. And I can honestly say I really don't want to watch nearly as much TV as I did. And the only way I can describe that change is that I changed the environment and it changed my behavior. It's simple as that. Think through what that is for you. What environment do you need to change as we go through the rest of the chapter? All right, back to the chapter. Environment is the invisible hand that shapes human behavior. Despite our unique personalities, certain behaviors tend to arise again and again under certain environmental conditions. In church, people tend to talk in whispers. On a dark street, people act wary and guarded. In this way, the most common form of change is not internal, but external. We are changed by the world around us. Every habit is context dependent. In 1936, psychologist Kurt Lewin wrote a simple equation that makes a powerful statement. Behavior is a function of the person in the environment. Or B equals F, P, E. It didn't take long for Lewin's equation to be tested in business. In 1952, the economist Hawkins Stern described a phenomenon he called suggestion impulse buying, which is triggered when a shopper sees a product for the first time and visualizes a need for it. In other words, customers will occasionally buy products not because they want them, but because of how they are presented to them. For example, items at eye level tend to be purchased more than those down near the floor. For this reason, you'll find expensive brand names featured in easy-to-reach locations on store shelves because they drive the most profit, while cheaper alternatives are tucked away in the harder-to-reach spots. The same goes for end caps, which are the units at the end of aisles. End caps are money-making machines for retailers because they are obvious locations that encounter a lot of foot traffic. For example, 45% of Coca-Cola sales come specifically from the end of the aisle racks. The more obviously available a product or service is, the more likely you are to try it. People drink Bud Light because it is in every bar and visit Starbucks because it is on every corner. We like to think that we are in control. If we choose water over soda, we assume it's because we wanted to do so. The truth, however, is that many of our actions we take each day are shaped not by purposeful drive and choice, but by the most obvious option. Every living being has its own method for sensing and understanding the world. Eagles have remarkable long-distance vision. Snakes can smell by tasting the air with their highly sensitive tongues. Sharks can detect small amounts of electricity and vibrations in the water caused by nearby fish. Even bacteria have chemoreceptors, tiny sensory cells that allow them to detect toxic chemicals in their environment. In humans, perception is directed by the sensory nervous system. We perceive the world through sight, sound, smell, touch, and taste. But we also have other ways of sensing stimuli. Some are conscious, but many are non conscious. For instance, you can notice when the temperature drops before a storm, or when the pain in your gut rises during a stomachache, or when you fall off balance while walking on rocky ground. Receptors in your body pick up on a wide range of internal stimuli, such as the amount of salt in your blood or the need to drink when thirsty. The most powerful of all human sensory abilities, however, is vision. The human body has about 11 million sensory receptors. Approximately 10 million of those are dedicated to sight. Some experts estimate that half of the brain's resources are used on vision. Given that we are more dependent on vision than on any other sense, it should come as no surprise that visual cues are the greatest catalyst of our behavior. For this reason, a small change in what you see can lead to a big shift in what you do. As a result, you can imagine how important it is to live and work in environments that are filled with productive cues and devoid of unproductive ones. Thankfully, there is good news in this respect. You don't have to be the victim of your environment. You can also be the architect of it. How to design your environment for success. During the energy crisis and oil embargo of the 1970s, Dutch researchers began to pay close attention to the country's energy usage. In one suburb near Amsterdam, they found that some homeowners used 30% less energy than their neighbors, despite the homes being of similar size and getting electricity for the same price. It turned out the houses in this neighborhood were nearly identical except for one feature: the location of the electrical meter. Some had one in the basement. Others had their electrical meter upstairs in the main hallway. As you may guess, the homes with the meters located in the main hallway used less electricity. With their energy cues more obvious and easy to track, people changed their behavior. Every habit is initiated by a cue, and we are more likely to notice cues that stand out. Unfortunately, the environments where we live and work often make it easy not to do certain actions because there's no obvious cue to trigger the behavior. It's easy not to practice the guitar when it's tucked away in the closet. It's easy not to read a book when the bookshelf is in the corner of the guest room. It's easy not to take your vitamins when they are out of sight in the pantry. When the cues that spark a habit are subtle or hidden, they are easy to ignore. By comparison, creating obvious visual cues can draw your attention toward a desired habit. In the early 1990s, the cleaning staff at Schiphol Airport in Amsterdam installed a small sticker that looked like a fly near the center of each urinal. Apparently, when men stepped up to the urinals, they aimed for what they thought was a bug. The stickers improved their aim and significantly reduced spillage around the urinals. Further analysis determined that the stickers cut bathroom cleaning costs by 8% per year. I've experienced the power of obvious cues in my own life. I used to buy apples from the store, put them in the crispier section at the bottom of the refrigerator, and forget all about them. By the time I remembered, the apples would have gone bad. I never saw them, so I never ate them. Eventually, I took my own advice and redesigned my environment. I bought a large display bowl and placed it in the middle of the kitchen counter. The next time I bought apples, and that was where they went, out in the open where I could see them. Almost like magic, I began eating a few apples each day simply because they were obvious rather than out of sight. Here are a few ways you can redesign your environment and make the cues for your preferred habits more obvious. If you want to remember to take your medication each night, pull your pill bottle directly next to the faucet on the bathroom counter. If you want to practice guitar more frequently, place your guitar stand in the middle of the living room. If you want to remember to send more thank you notes, keep a stack of stationery on your desk. If you want to drink more water, fill up a few water bottles each morning and place them in common locations around the house. If you want to make a habit a big part of your life, make the cue a big part of your environment. All right, let's step out for a second. Got some great input here on this, and this has been a big section that has changed my life. But before we get there, check out this ad from Anchor. Okay, so James Clear in this section, he says this: if you want to make a habit a big part of your life, make the cue a big part of your environment. How can you make the cues in your life bigger for the habits you want to create? If you want to read more, put books all over the house. If you want to get up early, set the coffee the night before it and set an alarm. If you want to work out, have your clothes, shoes, and pre-workout set out in your room so that when you get back first thing after class or work, you don't even think about it. You just put them on. Amazing. I love his advice here. Make the cues proportionally big to how much of a role you want that habit to play in your life. Go big with your cues. Make sure that you can see them. Make sure they're right in front of you with the habits that you're really focusing on. Great advice from James Clear here. All right, back to the chapter. The most persistent behaviors usually have multiple cues. Consider how many different ways a smoker could be prompted to pull out a cigarette. Driving in the car, seeing a friend smoke, feeling stressed at work, and so on. The same strategy can be employed for good habits. By sprinkling triggers throughout your surroundings, you increase the odds that you'll think about your habit throughout the day. Make sure the best choice is the most obvious one. Make a better decision. Make sure the best choice is the most obvious one. Making a better decision is easy and natural when the cues for good habits are right in front of you. Environmental design is powerful not only because of how it influences how we engage the world. Sorry, Logan. Lose my voice. Environment design is powerful not only because it influences how we engage the world, but also because we rarely do it. Most people live in a world others have created for them, but you can alter the spaces where you live and work to increase your exposure to positive cues and reduce your exposure to negative ones. Environment design allows you to take back control and become the architect of your life. Be the designer of your world and not merely the consumer of it. The context is the cue. The cues that trigger a habit can start out very specific, but over time your habits become associated not with a single trigger, but with the entire context surrounding the behavior. For example, many people drink more in social situations than they would ever drink alone. The trigger is rarely a single cue, but rather the whole situation. Watching your friends order drinks, hearing the music at the bar, seeing the beers on tap, we mentally assign our habits to the locations in which they occur. The home, the office, the gym. Each location develops a connection to certain habits and routines. You establish a particular relationship with the objects on your desk, the items on your kitchen counter, the things in your bedroom. Our behavior is not defined by the objects in the environment, but by our relationship to them. In fact, this is a useful way to think about the influence of the environment on your behavior. Stop thinking about your environment as filled with objects. Start thinking about it as filled with relationships. Think in terms of how you interact with the spaces around you. For one person, her couch is the place where she reads for an hour each night. For someone else, the couch is where he watches television and eats a bowl of ice cream after work. Different people can have different memories and thus different habits associated with the same place. The good news, you can train yourself to link a particular habit with a particular context. In one study, scientists instructed insomniacs to get into bed only when they were tired. If they couldn't fall asleep, they were told to sit in a different room until they became sleepy. Over time, subjects began to associate the context of their bed with the action of sleeping, and it became easier to quickly fall asleep when they climbed in bed. Their brains learned that sleeping, not browsing on their phone, not watching television, not staring at the clock, was the only action that happened in that room. The power of context also reveals an important strategy. Habits can be easier to change in new environments. It helps to escape the subtle triggers and cues that nudge you toward your current habits. Go to a new place, a different coffee shop, a bench in the park, a corner in your room you seldom use, and create a new routine there. It is easier to associate a new habit with a context than to build a new habit in the face of competing cues. It can be difficult to go to bed early if you watch television in your bedroom each night. It can be hard to study in the living room without getting distracted if that's where you play video games. But when you step outside your normal environment, you leave your behavioral biases behind. You aren't battling environmental cues which allow new habits to form without interruption. Want to think more creatively? Move to a bigger room, a rooftop patio, or a building with an expansive architecture. Take a break from the space where you do your daily work, which is also linked to your current thought patterns. Trying to eat healthier? It is likely that you shop on autopilot at your regular supermarket. Try a new grocery store. You may find it easier to avoid unhealthy food when your brain doesn't automatically know where it's located in the store. When you manage to create an entirely new environment, redefine or rearrange your current one. when you can't manage to get to an entirely new environment, redefine or rearrange your current one. Create a separate space for work, study, exercise, entertaining, and cooking. The mantra I find useful is one space, one use. When I started my career as an entrepreneur, I would often work from my couch at the kitchen table. In the evenings, I found it very difficult to stop working. There was no clear division between the end of work time and the beginning of personal time. Was the kitchen table my office or the space where I ate meals? Was the couch where I relaxed or where I sent emails? Everything happened in the same place. A few years later, I could finally afford to move to a home with a separate room for my office. Suddenly, work was something that happened in here, and personal life was something that happened out there. It was easier for me to turn off the professional side of my brain when there was a clear dividing line between work life and home life. Each room had one primary use. The kitchen was for cooking. The office was for working. Whenever possible, avoiding mixing the context of one habit with another. When you start mixing contexts, you'll start mixing habits, and the easier ones will usually win out. This is one reason why the versatility of modern technology is both a strength and a weakness. You can use your phone for all sorts of tasks, which make it a powerful device. But when you use your phone to do nearly anything, it becomes hard to associate it with one task. You want to be productive, but you're also conditioned to browse social media, check email, and play video games whenever you open your phone. It's a mishmash of cues. You may be thinking, you don't understand. I live in New York City. My apartment is the size of a smartphone. I need each room to play multiple roles. Fair enough. If your space is limited, divide your room into activity zones, a chair for reading, a desk for writing, a table for eating. You can do the same with your digital spaces. I know a writer who uses his computer only for writing, his tablet only for reading, and his phone only for social media and texting. Every habit should have a home. If you can manage to stick with this strategy, each context will become associated with a particular habit and mode of thought. Habits thrive under predictable circumstances like these. Focus comes automatically when you're sitting at your work desk. Relaxation is easier when you're in a space designed for that purpose. Sleep comes quickly when it is the only thing that happens in your bedroom. If you want behaviors that are stable and predictable, you need an environment that is stable and predictable. A stable environment where everything has a place and a purpose is an environment where habits can easily form. Chapter summary. Small changes in context can lead to a large change in behavior. Every habit is initiated by a cue. We are more likely to notice cues that stand out. Make the cues of good habits obvious in your environment. Gradually, your habits become associated with a single trigger, but with the entire context surrounding the behavior. The context becomes the cue. It is easier to build new habits in an environment, a new environment, because you are not fighting against old cues. Isn't that amazing? I used to think that my motivation was the main factor in me developing or not developing habits. I felt the frustration over and over again as my motivation was fickle or not strong enough. This book liberated me from that. Isn't that amazing? I used to think that my motivation was the main factor in me developing or not developing habits. I felt the frustration over and over again as my motivation was fickle or not strong enough. This book liberated me. From, well, me. As I started to change my environment, I saw my habits change with them. Thank you, James Clear, for all the leadership gold today. If you haven't picked up the book, Atomic Habits, get out there and buy it now and check out the rest of the book. It's just as good as this awesome chapter. If you're going to buy the book, use our link in the show notes. You'll get a great book at no extra cost to you, but we will get a portion of the proceeds to keep bringing you the best content we possibly can. That's our first book for your next chapter. Over the coming weeks, we're going to keep bringing you some of the best chapters from the books we love, coaching you to wring them out for every ounce of leadership gold. This is your host, Jake Welchens, and remember, life's too short for bad books. If you know someone out there who would benefit from today's episode, please share. Let's build this thing together. I need your help. To connect or see what I'm reading right now, follow me on my Instagram at Jake Welchens or my Goodreads profile at www.goodreads.com/Jake Welchens. This podcast is brought to you by the Launchpad Podcast Collection and performed and written by myself, Jake Welchens. Podcast production by the one and only Logan Bongean. See you next time on Readout. Okay, so James Clear in this section, he says this: if you want to make a habit a big part of your life, make the cue a big part of your environment. How can you make the cues in your life bigger for the habits you want to create? If you want to read more, put books all over the house. If you want to get up early, set the coffee the night before it and set an alarm. If you want to work out, have your clothes, shoes, and pre-workout set out in your room so that when you get back first thing after class or work, you don't even think about it. You just put them on. Amazing. I love his advice here. Make the cues proportionally big to how much of a role you want that habit to play in your life. Go big with your cues. Make sure that you can see them. Make sure they're right in front of you with the habits that you're really focusing on. Great advice from James Clear here. All right, back to the chapter. The most persistent behaviors usually have multiple cues. Consider how many different ways a smoker could be prompted to pull out a cigarette. Driving in the car, seeing a friend smoke, feeling stressed at work, and so on. The same strategy can be employed for good habits. By sprinkling triggers throughout your surroundings, you increase the odds that you'll think about your habit throughout the day. Make sure the best choice is the most obvious one. Making a better decision is easy and natural when the cues for good habits are right in front of you. Environment design is powerful not only because it influences how we engage the world, but also because we rarely do it. Most people live in a world others have created for them, but you can alter the spaces where you live and work to increase your exposure to positive cues and reduce your exposure to negative ones. Environment design allows you to take back control and become the architect of your life. Be the designer of your world and not merely the consumer of it. The context is the cue. The cues that trigger a habit can start out very specific, but over time your habits become associated not with a single trigger, but with the entire context surrounding the behavior. For example, many people drink more in social situations than they would ever drink alone. The trigger is rarely a single cue, but rather the whole situation. Watching your friends order drinks, hearing the music at the bar, seeing the beers on tap, we mentally assign our habits to the locations in which they occur. The home, the office, the gym. Each location develops a connection to certain habits and routines. You establish a particular relationship with the objects on your desk, the items on your kitchen counter, the things in your bedroom. Our behavior is not defined by the objects in the environment, but by our relationship to them. In fact, this is a useful way to think about the influence of the environment on your behavior. Stop thinking about your environment as filled with objects. Start thinking about it as filled with relationships. Think in terms of how you interact with the spaces around you. For one person, her couch is the place where she reads for an hour each night. For someone else, the couch is where he watches television and eats a bowl of ice cream after work. Different people can have different memories and thus different habits associated with the same place. The good news, you can train yourself to link a particular habit with a particular context. In one study, scientists instructed insomniacs to get into bed only when they were tired. If they couldn't fall asleep, they were told to sit in a different room until they became sleepy. Over time, subjects began to associate the context of their bed with the action of sleeping, and it became easier to quickly fall asleep when they climbed in bed. Their brains learned that sleeping, not browsing on their phone, not watching television, not staring at the clock, was the only action that happened in that room. The power of context also reveals an important strategy. Habits can be easier to change in new environments. It helps to escape the subtle triggers and cues that nudge you toward your current habits. Go to a new place, a different coffee shop, a bench in the park, a corner in your room you seldom use, and create a new routine there. It is easier to associate a new habit with a context than to build a new habit in the face of competing cues. It can be difficult to go to bed early if you watch television in your bedroom each night. It can be hard to study in the living room without getting distracted if that's where you play video games. But when you step outside your normal environment, you leave your behavioral biases behind. You aren't battling environmental cues which allow new habits to form without interruption. Want to think more creatively? Move to a bigger room, a rooftop patio, or a building with an expansive architecture. Take a break from the space where you do your daily work, which is also linked to your current thought patterns. Trying to eat healthier? It is likely that you shop on autopilot at your regular supermarket. Try a new grocery store. You may find it easier to avoid unhealthy food when your brain doesn't automatically know where it's located in the store. Create a separate space for work, study, exercise, entertaining, and cooking. The mantra I find useful is one space, one use. When I started my career as an entrepreneur, I would often work from my couch at the kitchen table. In the evenings, I found it very difficult to stop working. There was no clear division between the end of work time and the beginning of personal time. Was the kitchen table my office or the space where I ate meals? Was the couch where I relaxed or where I sent emails? Everything happened in the same place. A few years later, I could finally afford to move to a home with a separate room for my office. Suddenly, work was something that happened in here, and personal life was something that happened out there. It was easier for me to turn off the professional side of my brain when there was a clear dividing line between work life and home life. Each room had one primary use. The kitchen was for cooking. The office was for working. Whenever possible, avoiding mixing the context of one habit with another. When you start mixing contexts, you'll start mixing habits, and the easier ones will usually win out. This is one reason why the versatility of modern technology is both a strength and a weakness. You can use your phone for all sorts of tasks, which make it a powerful device. But when you use your phone to do nearly anything, it becomes hard to associate it with one task. You want to be productive, but you're also conditioned to browse social media, check email, and play video games whenever you open your phone. It's a mishmash of cues. You may be thinking, you don't understand. I live in New York City. My apartment is the size of a smartphone. I need each room to play multiple roles. Fair enough. If your space is limited, divide your room into activity zones, a chair for reading, a desk for writing, a table for eating. You can do the same with your digital spaces. I know a writer who uses his computer only for writing, his tablet only for reading, and his phone only for social media and texting. Every habit should have a home. If you can manage to stick with this strategy, each context will become associated with a particular habit and mode of thought. Habits thrive under predictable circumstances like these. Focus comes automatically when you're sitting at your work desk. Relaxation is easier when you're in a space designed for that purpose. Sleep comes quickly when it is the only thing that happens in your bedroom. If you want behaviors that are stable and predictable, you need an environment that is stable and predictable. A stable environment where everything has a place and a purpose is an environment where habits can easily form. Chapter summary. Small changes in context can lead to a large change in behavior. Every habit is initiated by a cue. We are more likely to notice cues that stand out. Make the cues of good habits obvious in your environment. Gradually, your habits become associated with a single trigger, but with the entire context surrounding the behavior. The context becomes the cue. It is easier to build new habits in an environment, a new environment, because you are not fighting against old cues. Isn't that amazing? I used to think that my motivation was the main factor in me developing or not developing habits. I felt the frustration over and over again as my motivation was fickle or not strong enough. This book liberated me from, well, me. As I started to change my environment, I saw my habits change with them. Thank you, James Clear, for all the leadership gold today. If you haven't picked up the book, Atomic Habits, get out there and buy it now and check out the rest of the book. It's just as good as this awesome chapter. If you're going to buy the book, use our link in the show notes. You'll get a great book at no extra cost to you, but we will get a portion of the proceeds to keep bringing you the best content we possibly can. That's our first book for your next chapter. Over the coming weeks, we're going to keep bringing you some of the best chapters from the books we love, coaching you to wring them out for every ounce of leadership gold. This is your host, Jake Welchens, and remember, life's too short for bad books. If you know someone out there who would benefit from today's episode, please share. Let's build this thing together. I need your help. To connect or see what I'm reading right now, follow me on my Instagram at Jake Welchens or my Goodreads profile at www.goodreads.com/Jake Welchens. This podcast is brought to you by the Launchpad Podcast Collection and performed and written by myself, Jake Welchens. Podcast production by the one and only Logan Bonjean. See you next time on Read Out.